What's going on, everybody? Thank you for joining us. You are on the Rational Revolution. And I am your host, Mark Becker. What is up? Hey, last week, if you missed it, we had a conversation with the brilliant Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area. We talked about, all things Wisconsin politics. He's brilliant. He had such great insight. So if you want to listen to it, download the Civic Media app. Check out the website. There's podcasts available and all that stuff. And you might want to listen to this episode as well. Because, hey, I have a dear friend of mine. Her name's Hua Utek. And we're going to talk about some of the stuff that she's been up to. But May, I know this is going to be airing in June, but May is Mental Health Month. And I would be remiss if we didn't talk about it because, you know, so many people are going through so many things. And it only is taboo if it's not talked about. And so I wanted to bring a dear friend in and talk about things that she went through. I'll talk about things that I went through, and maybe we'll do an episode that's not politics related, but it's people related. And in preparing for this episode, I saw that a statistic that actually kind of shocked me. And it's 48% of both women and men have experienced psychological aggression and emotional abuse in their lifetime in the United States. And the percentage is so high, but it's such a topic that's tucked down into the deepest parts of us. And I don't think it should be. And so here to talk with me about it is my dear friend, Hua.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's an honor. And like, so usually I have just a million notes, and I started preparing for this episode like a week, like the moment that I was done with the previous one, and we're going to wing this here. So how did you and I meet? Do you remember?
I think I had reached out to you, correct?
If I remember right, it's your brother.
Yes. My brother had shared with me because he's been a huge part of helping me through that process. And I just remember hitting a certain point in my divorce process that I just felt like I needed more guidance. And you came to mind for him. And so he just suggested that I reach out to you. And, you know, I believe I reached out to you and then really asked you for your own personal experience and your recommendations.
Yeah, it was, and then I think we talked on the phone for like 2 hours the first time. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, yeah, you know, and that was kind of crazy. And so tell, what are you comfortable telling? Like, what did you go through? And your background is in clinical psychology.
Actually, right? It's social work.
Social work.
Yes, yeah, social work. And I do have marriage and family therapy training as well. And I've had experience working in domestic abuse shelters as well. And so that is my, you know, like work background. But when I went through my divorce process, I was completely shaken by that process. From the moment that my ex had filed for divorce, at that point in time, really I only knew two people who were married, who had gone through divorce, and their experience was probably ideal, you know, for anyone going through that process. You know, it was right. Amicable. Right. And, you know, so I didn't really have any experience hearing about the post-separation abuse aspect of divorce. And so when I went through the process of separation and divorce, like I said, I was shaken. I did not expect to have to go through the pain of having to really defend myself and really come to terms with the fact that I had to just follow suit, basically, to make sure that things were okay, especially because I do have young kids. But it was heartbreaking because I thought that the systems that are in place, you know, mm-hmm. the law, the law and everything would be on my side and would be able to make sure that things were fair. And that is just not the case.
Right.
So when I finally reached out to you, I was at my wit's end and I was searching for just some guidance around what to do, because I just felt like the power that my ex had over the whole situation, both financially and psychologically, really broke me.
And talk about, I mean, I tell your story and how you can, you know, with like what happened?
You know, I did feel in a sense blindsided with the divorce because I thought we had a great relationship. You know, I felt like we were both pretty respectful of one another, and probably around 2 years prior to him filing for divorce, our marriage started to break down. We had been together for well over a decade at this point, and, you know, just things started feeling really off. And I thought, oh, maybe it's just the time of life that we were in. I just figured that maybe it was our kids are getting older and, you know, there's just more with scheduling and whatnot.
It's hard.
So, yeah. Just, and at that point in time, I felt like we really didn't have many struggles in our marriage. And so when things started breaking down, we, you know, started doing therapy. And instead of things getting better, things actually just got worse. And I didn't learn until after he had filed for divorce that he had been having an affair. And there was a lot of intentionality behind the forms of abuse that he was inflicting on me and in our marriage. And I would say that prior to that point in our marriage, I've always been a very strong, strong person. I've always been very independent, and I've always been very achievement-based. So I'm someone that who always worked for whatever I needed, you know. And when we got to that separation divorce point, I had felt like a shell of a person. Mm-hmm. And it's wild to think that within a span of 2 years that psychological abuse can create that type or can have that type of an impact. And once we got to the point of divorce and I was able to at least like feel the ground beneath my feet again, I started really diving into understanding trauma. Because for me, you know, nobody recognized me, even my family. And so I felt so determined to figure out what the heck had happened and why I was responding in the way that I was, because I just no longer felt like I had a voice. I had no longer felt like I had an identity, and I felt like I needed to be strong for myself, but also for my kids. And so that's kind of where the coaching has come in. Once I dove into really understanding trauma, I really reached out to a lot of women that I had met around the world. And through that process, I really started to see a lot of the same patterns that happen within relationships when there is significant psychological abuse. And so many parallels in the stories. Mm. You know, it's almost like there is a playbook for people who go on to abuse.
Do you think that like that the people that do perpetrate that mm-hmm. do that, do you think they know it?
Yes.
Do you think there's intent?
I would say that there is a strategy and an intention behind that. You know, even when you think of the term gaslighting.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of gaslighting, I know it's overused, just like the term narcissism is overused, right? But really to clarify, there's a difference between a person who lies and a person who gaslights.
Okay.
You know,
what is that?
An example would be, let's say, you know, even just like with this meeting today, you know, let's say I was like 30 minutes late.
Okay.
And if I come in and I say, oh, I'm sorry, you know, and I was late because I, you know, the train and, you know, and whether there was a train or not, you know, maybe I'm just lying, right?
Right.
But if I come in and say, actually, I thought you had told me that it was an hour later, you know?
Okay.
And so then I shift the blame onto you.
Yeah.
And then I create this shift in reality around, you know, and then if you are somebody who starts to question wait, did I give her the wrong time?
Right.
You know, so that's where the difference lies in someone who lies and someone who intentionally tries to change the narrative of the story so that the, so they're, you know, they don't have to face any accountability and they don't have to face any, you know, anything that comes with that.
Right. That's, yeah, okay. You know, and that's wild. And so you were experiencing these things. How long did it take you to realize, like, holy crap, like I've been hollowed, you know?
Because, you know, divorce had never been a word that we had even used in our relationship. Because we had always been so focused on, you know, working through whatever issues that would come up.
Right.
And because it was, I had changed so drastically in that 2 years, even the word narcissism did not even come up in conversation until a family member had mentioned it. And even then I was like, no, that doesn't apply. Like,
right.
What are you talking about?
Right.
So it was probably around that divorce mark when he separated that I really started, then I had space and time to really understand what happened, because there was that physical distance.
Yeah. Okay. So that makes sense. So it really, you didn't see how deep it was until there was some separation.
Right.
Ugh. Yeah. And it's, that's crazy. Cause you know, I think of all of the people that don't get that don't have that opportunity, you know, it's something that's wild. We got like 30 seconds left in the segment, so we'll talk about this, you know, some more. I remember when I spoke with you and we talked, I think, for the first time for like 2 hours, I didn't realize some of the things that I went through was as traumatic, you know, as it was. And, you know, it's something that, again, we'll talk about this in a moment, but it's something that really needs to be normalized. We'll talk more on the Rational Revolution here on the other side. We got Mark Becker and my dear friend Hua. We'll see you in a little bit. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wiper slapping time. I was holding Bobby's hand in mine. We sang every song for your son. Hey, Bobby. Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. I love playing this song. We play it for my dear friend Chris, who's on the campaign trail working her tail off. She's on her third pair of shoes and her second pair of golf shoes, because that's where she has her Sundays with her beloved. So we send our best to Chris, but we talk with another friend of mine, Hua, here in the Rational Revolution. You're talking about the experience you had with your divorce, and we were talking about how you kind of came to the realization when you got your break, when you got room to breathe.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Very interesting, because I was so resistant to that separation, because once again, I had no idea why we were even at that point. Even our therapist at that point was shocked that we were at that point of divorce. And even in her words, she said 3 months prior, we were the couple that had been doing the best compared to all of our other clients. So that's how sudden it was. And with the separation, it was forced because my aunt had told him he needed to move out, because she could see the physical state that I was in. And when we finally had that distance from one another, I was really forced into really understanding why I was feeling the way that I was. Because I started questioning everything. Every conversation that we had, every fight, every action and inaction that had happened in our relationship in those 2 years, I questioned. And through that, I started really trying to seek help, because I just felt like this isn't normal. Like, how is it? Even when I was sharing with people that we were divorcing, everyone was shocked. You know, and I had to prepare myself for those conversations, because I felt like I had to be okay so that I could be okay for the other person who was in shock because of the divorce.
Yeah.
And when I started really seeking different types of therapy, that's when I found out about what covert abuse was. Once again, I worked in domestic violence shelters. I did counseling for families and couples, and I only had the lens of what overt abuse was, which is more of the physical abuse and the, you know, overt ways of how, you know, people can control one another. I had no understanding of what covert abuse was.
So what, and what is that? I mean, you know, describe that a little bit for people that listen. Because, I mean, it, sometimes people don't even know. I mean, it was you. You had no idea until you could breathe and you're like, oh, my God.
Right. I mean, I had the educational, the work experience, and even life experience.
And you're suffering years
of
trauma.
Right.
I have no idea.
Right. And it really is the... covert abuse really happens over a course of time, and it's these slow forms of like love bombing. I know that that term is used a lot too, where there's like this moments of love and care. And, you know, with covert abusers, you know, there's this way of them being able to control empathy and use it as a form of manipulation. And I would say my ex was someone who I always thought was super emotional. And when I look at it now, it very much was a form of manipulation. And so it's using love and emotion and power and control in very subtle ways.
Love with a dagger.
Right.
It, that, which is, that's crazy. What, so when you're going through your divorce, how, what were the ramifications? What happened during that time?
I discovered that him and his family had actually been planning the divorce a year, at least a year in advance. So I was way behind, you know, with that. I mean, they were just, you know.
Okay.
Right. 100 steps in front of me. And so they had already financially, they had changed to shareholding in the family business. So financially, they had power over me. They had already started like this campaign around even who I was as a mother. So at this point, I'm a stay-at-home mom. I've been a stay-at-home mom for at least 12 years at that point. And so, you know, all of these things that play into divorce when you have children. I mean, it was just a lot of... every day waking up and thinking, is this my reality? Is this truly my reality? Like my life shift so quickly. So it was the financial, it was the children, it was even legally, they were able to use the legal system to also have power over me and to scare me using police. I mean, it was just pretty much everything that you can think of.
It's so funny, you know, you hear, it's not funny at all, but like, you know, the stuff that we talked about and the stuff that I've heard from others and stuff I've experienced, it's like, yeah, that all, that jives, you know, and it's wild. And so, you know, you and I connected because we talked a lot about the gaps in the legal system and the struggles that you had. You know, you had an attorney that was not, you know, finance, it's, you're being a fiduciary, right?
Right.
I don't
know,
you know, and in legal, it's, I don't know what that is, but it's not what you got.
All right.
And so how did that all progress?
My last attorney, I mean, our divorce process was a 19-month long process. Oh. And once again, stay-at-home mom. You know, and he had control of all the finances. I mean, up until the point of the divorce, I knew everything, I thought. Yeah. I knew all of our finances. I was in control of that. And then it went to this shift of, you know, me no longer having access to anything. And so that's a stressor. My mental health is a stressor. The impact of the divorce on my children is a stressor. And when you don't even have a lawyer who's actually representing you, that's also a struggle. Like, I felt like I was up against so many different things. And right. yeah.
And we're going to talk about that in a little bit, but you went from, and this was something that I've never said this to you, but I'm so proud of what you've done. You went from the stay-at-home mom to a best-selling author as part of, you know, your healing and your journey. You I think I could say this on the radio. You kicked ass. Bleep it out if I can't. But but I mean, talk about that. Like, this is incredible.
Thank you.
What you did. I mean, so who wrote a book, The Unseen Wounds of Women? We're going to link it to all of our socials. So really, I mean, talk about your book.
It was really part of my healing process. Earlier, I mentioned that I really dove into doing any kind of therapy. I really was just like, I need to do anything and everything to feel human again, like to feel like myself again. And so I just, you know, chased different mentors and practitioners throughout the world. And I was able to find Caroline Strawson, who is out of the UK. She's amazing. And she focuses on helping men and women around the world take charge of their life through getting trauma informed and then becoming coaches to help other people.
That's incredible. We're going to continue this discussion here on the other side of the break with my dear friend, Hua Yutek. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. What's going on, everybody? Thanks for sticking with us here on the Rational Revolution. I have my friend Hua Yutek, and we're talking about trauma and things that people can experience in relationships. And you know, we talked about the fact that 48% of women and 48% of men report being in having emotional abusive situations. And so that is a statistic that my friend Hua and I unfortunately share. And I'm going to talk about something I've never really discussed publicly because it brings me to a dark place that I don't want to go. But hey, you know, this show is about healing, and maybe this is part of my journey too. There's maybe 10 people that on this earth that know this. Hua is one of them, and I'm very grateful that you share that part. You know, my story that I have, and again, this is just experience that I had. You know, the relationship that I had, it started off normal. It was not, you know, it was fine. But then as the relationship went along, there was things. And it's not big things and things that I remember, but what I do remember, it was a comment here or there, and it takes you back and like, oh, wow, that was actually really hurtful. Like, okay, she's having a bad day, whatever. But then it quickly would spiral itself into something that I never thought I would let myself get into. And it's hard not to be disappointed with myself that I let myself be defined so intimately by someone else in that type of a regard. You know, and we ended up getting married. We had a child. We bought a house. All these things because it would make it better, and it didn't. And I'm not going to get into specifics, but it was basically, you know, every day I felt inadequate. I felt a failure. I'll wait till people find out about the real Mark Becker. You know, it was hurtful. Terrible husband, father, partner. All career was terrible. It was hard. I tried really, really hard, but nothing I did was ever good enough, and that's a really bad feeling. And I don't blame the person. You know, because I mean, the way she grew up, her, she saw this behavior from her mom, who, and not to mince words, but she's the worst person I've ever met in my life because she treats people like they're pests, you know, friends, family. It's horrific. And, you know, and she's worse to her husband. maybe it's changed since I left their family, and I hope it has, but it, you know, she grew up thinking this is normal, and, you know, and it's absolutely not. But there were really two instances that defined my journey. We were on like the deck of a cruise ship in the middle of paradise, and we're mini golfing, and something happened, and it just blew up into this big thing, and I felt the sinking feeling, no pun intended, on a cruise ship, but the sinking feeling of like, it's not going to get better, and I can't take this anymore. And so there was a couple weeks later, she was on a trip with her mom, and she was going to get back on the Sunday or Monday morning. I don't know what it was. And so I'm allergic to peanuts, and I bought a Snickers bar because I was going to solve the problem. If I don't have an EpiPen and I eat a peanut, I die. And so the night before, I was going to do it. And, you know, and then she would come home, and our son is in the crib, so he's safe. I am no longer in the picture. And that would be that. And so that night I went into his room and I picked him up from the crib. It was about an hour before sunrise, because that's when I was going to do it. And I hugged him. And I told him it wasn't his fault. I apologized. And I wished for him a better life than what I could give. And I set him down. I gave him a kiss. And I sat on the chair in his room just wishing that the sun would not come up. But what happened was he woke up and he reached to me, and I felt this wave over me that was frustration and sadness and guilt, but it was hope. And that night I went from a victim to a fighter. He saved my life just by waking up. One day I'll thank him for that. And so that night, it was not how did this happen to me. It's what can I do to get out of it? And so later that week, I had a work trip, and I was supposed to go to the Dells to do this 3-day retreat, talking about really exciting stuff like gap insurance and red flags laws and stuff. And so on the drive to the Dells, I was thinking, you know, what do I do? And it hit me like a ton of bricks. She told me, you know, if you ever cheat on me, we're done. And it was like an idea from a bad Seinfeld episode. I'll just tell her I cheated. I never did, but I'm going to tell her I did. And that's how we get out of it. And so we're sitting in a table at a conference room, and with 40 other people talking about exciting things like gap insurance and red flags law. And here I am texting my ex, telling her that I cheated. I never did, but I knew that was going to get me out. And I sent the message, and I felt this sense of relief, like, oh my God, I'm done. And it was quickly replaced by terror, because she responded back, who was it? We can fix this. You know, like, oh my God. And she got my parents involved and my friends, and this still hurts today. She got my biggest mentor that I ever had in my life involved. And his name was Michael. He was a giant in my life. He was like a second father. I think about him just about every day. And he, you know, when I got back from the retreat, we had lunch, and he's like, hey, you can fix this. You can do this. You're going to be fine. We can get through this. And I couldn't tell him. And I wanted to tell him so bad. Like, you don't understand. Like, this is life and death. I have to get out. I can't do this. I have to get out. And that was the last time I spoke with him, because we did end up getting divorced, and he's not in my life. Maybe, I hope he listens to this show. Maybe he will. But the only person, excuse me, that I told was my mom. And we sat down and talked about what was happening. And she was like, Harriet Tubman. You know, I told her, and she grabbed my hand and said, it's not your fault. And she sang me a song from Mr. Rogers about loving me for who I am. And she got to work and she said, okay, well, let's get you safe. She was my Harriet Tubman. And I got safe. I got out. It was the most difficult thing that I've ever went through in my life. I've never told this story before. I probably couldn't get through it. I didn't get through it now. But there is hope. There is another side. And there is light. And there's so many people that are going through these things. And they shouldn't. Nobody deserves that. Nobody. And, you know, there were ramifications to this all, you know, where Hua and I kind of bonded was a lot of the legal stuff that was difficult. In my case, you know, I had a judge that really, I had no idea what my rights were. It was life and death. I needed to get out. And so I settled for things that I shouldn't have settled for. And honestly, it's thanks to my wife that she gave me the courage and the support and the push to fight for better things like a custody agreement, to be able to see my son more than one day a week. It took 7 years to get that done. 7 years. And it's hard because I look at the child that my wife and I have, who's now at that age where I missed this time with my oldest son. And it's such a hard thing because I know that those are years I'll never get back. And but it was so difficult. And there's still manipulation a little bit on that side. There was a time where, you know, it was told to him from their side of, hey, you know, his grandpa said, do you want to know a secret? The reason why your mom and your dad got divorced was because of your dad's wife. And that's not true. And some of those things that happened still happen. You know, you talk about gaslighting and you talk about abuse, and it's sad to see, because while she and they can't control me necessarily, they still do that through him. And it's hard and it's not fair. And yeah, I mean, if you're going through that out there, you don't need to, and you shouldn't. And yeah, I thank all of you for listening to my rant. But I only say this because it's such a taboo thing that, you know, men can go through what I went through, or it's not something that's talked about, but it's something that clearly happens all too often. And it's almost like you wish it was physical, because then there's something you can explain.
Right, yeah. People just understand physical violence. And it's hard to explain when you're under this sense of control and manipulation.
And it all of a sudden you look back on that time and it's like, oh my God, how, you know, and like, man, I was a chairman of a political organization. I had a good career. We had a house in the suburbs. I was nothing.
Right.
You know, and like, it's interesting. I asked my wife about this because I'm remarried and she's incredible. And I ask her, you know, and I know that I suffer from stuff where, you know, she'll just be genuinely nice to me. It's like, why, what's going on here? And I asked her, I was like, is the PTSD, is that still there? She, like, without hesitation, oh yeah, oh yeah. And so, you know, just the fact that.
It's great that you have that awareness.
Yeah. But it's something like to be able to accept the fact that you can be loved.
Right.
Is something.
Right.
You know? And for her to say, I love you, no, even with all of that.
Right.
Like, holy crap.
I think it's so important to even, you know, with what you shared is how you start to doubt yourself.
Oh, my God.
So many victim survivors believe, are made to believe that they are the abusive ones.
Yeah.
And then you question yourself and you question if you are the problem.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, it's, yeah, you know, and I don't know how long it takes to get over things, if at all.
And
or do you just understand it, you know?
When you look at covert abuse, I really feel like it is the most harmful form of abuse because it actually changes your brain chemistry. It changes your, you know, like how your body responds to life. Mm. And that's something that needs to be talked about more.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's, yeah, it's something that, you know, I think with Mental Awareness Month, like that's good, but you look at resources, and we're going to talk about that in just a little bit. You look at resources, they're not, it's not there, you know? And so here on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about a book that can help, and we're going to talk about healing and what to do. God forbid you're in this situation. We'll be right back on The Rational Revolution. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained and rode us all the way into New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues. Windshield wipers slapping time, I was holding Bobby's hand in mine. What's up, everybody? Welcome back. The Rational Revolution. This is a heavy one. Oh, my God. So we're talking with a dear friend of mine, who you tech, who went through some challenging things. And once again, she's got a book here. She's a best-selling author. And we're going to talk about healing. Talk about this book. What's in it?
It shares my childhood and, you know, a lot of trauma, a lot of stress and trauma. It's rooted in the first 7 years of your life. And my family came over here from the Vietnam War, from Laos. And so my dad is someone who suffers from PTSD.
He saw a lot.
Yeah, with the war. He had to help his family and extended family survive the war. And so growing up, it wasn't the easiest. He did hit a certain point in his life where the PTSD was just coming out in really volatile ways. And even through all that, I still was able to maintain enough of a mindset around being able to distinguish between what was his and what was mine. You know, because with abuse, there is a lot of externalizing it, you know, to other people and shifting that blame to other people.
Right.
You're the reason why you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And so, but I was, from a young age, I was able to make that distinction.
Yeah, nice.
I'm not sure how, but, you know, I just always carried that within myself. And even in other relationships, whenever there was a power, you know, difference, like I was still able to distinguish between what was mine and what was theirs. Mm. In my marriage, I feel like the reason why that psychological abuse really affected me in the way that it did was because I trusted him and I believed wholeheartedly that he was someone who had my interest at, you know, in hand too. And so when there is that back and forth of loving you and showing you they love you to all of a sudden, like, this coldness and this externalizing of blame and everything else, you know, it is such a hard thing for your system to really understand. Yeah. I was so confused that whole time. I was so confused. And, you know, through that, I realized, because part of my own healing, I was so hard on myself. Mm. I know you shared that in your story too, of how the heck am I in this position? Like, I'm a strong person. I'm successful. Like, how the hell did I get here? Right. you know, and a lot of times it is that self-blame and, you know, that lack of understanding of what abuse is that keeps a person stuck. You know, we become self-loathing and, you know, we're so afraid that we are the problem and that we caused it. And that's what keeps people stuck in that dynamic. And so when I was hard on myself, I'm like, wait, I've always been able to get through things. I have a strong mind. My determination should be able to get me through this. But over time, as I went through the divorce process, I just kept feeling worse and worse. I started shutting out the world. I lost a ton of weight. Like I wasn't eating because I just was in pure survival mode of trying to make sure that my children were safe and that I was safe. And, you know, I was doing therapy, but it wasn't enough. And what I realize now is that talk therapy is great, but when you are living with trauma, you really need to work on yourself somatically. And soma means body. And you really need to be able to do trauma work that releases the imprint of that trauma that really gets embedded in the muscle memory of your system. And so doing somatic work and mindset work and behavioral stuff, I mean, really healing comes, you know, through on five levels. Being able to heal five levels of your system is really the most effective way to move beyond that trauma.
And I, you know, one of the things when I was researching this was like, you know, for the resources that are out there, it's not great. It's not great for women. It's really not great for men. I think like, you know, if there's a situation where it's like, I need to get out, this is life or death. I need to get out. It's like the Golden House in Green Bay or like a place in Milwaukee. It's not great.
Right. Right.
And so, you know, and like to be clear, if anybody that's listening to this knows someone or has something that they need, you know, like message the show, find me on social. Like this is a thing. If you need help, you're not alone. And I think that's what you say in your book too, because there's so many people in here and their stories.
Right. I mean, you know, going back to my work history again, my life experience and work history, I had a little bit of training in trauma, but it was nothing. It did not, you know, speak to the type of trauma that I'm seeing everywhere now. And even with a lot of therapists, you know, there's minimal training in trauma, social workers, minimal training. Court professionals, minimal. And so it's still a very new thing that I feel like needs to be talked about is really truly understanding what stress and trauma actually does to our system.
Beyond
just intimate partner violence, you know, it is the day-to-day life stressors that really add to that.
And, you know, and it's not anything that's, oh God, you could do 3-4 episodes on this. Yeah. You know, it's something that, you know, is experienced in the workforce and partners and friendships. And it's, you know, it's interesting. And like, I personally, when I went through that, I try so hard to make sure that I'm not that person. And, you know, and I ask my wife all the time, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? And it's like, drives her nuts. But like, I never want to give to her what was given to me, you know? And that's, I don't know if that goes away.
It does.
Yeah?
It does. Yeah. You know, when I talked about like the five levels, it really is healing yourself on the somatic level, once again, through your body. On the emotional level, on the level of your thoughts, your conscious thoughts, because you're constantly questioning yourself. And through your behaviors, and then through the unconscious level, which is those inner core wounds that we aren't aware of. You know, that sense of wanting to be feel seen and heard and understood and loved. I mean, that is the core wounding that shows up in all these crazy ways.
It's something that I hope no one has to go through, but if they do, as Mr. Rogers says, we love you just the way you are. Thanks for sticking with us here on the Rational Revolution. Mark Becker with my friend Hua. And we'll see you next week.
Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained and rode us all the way into New Orleans.